produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier, VR Hoisington and Wayne Hall. This is Yes Music Podcast episode 374, 1000 Hands First Listen.
This is Bill Bruford, the ever-enthusiastic young drummer from the group Yes, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 374 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along a little bit later on. You can always get involved yourself with the podcast, and please do via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. This week, Mark and I got our hands on 1000 Hands, or at least our virtual hands, as we received a review download copy. So we've pulled our initial reactions to the music, and that's coming up in a moment. Also, we have a 2p on the Anderson final Yes Project rumours, so it's an Anderson-rich episode. In the Patreon group this week, we gave away 2 copies of the Key Studio album and continue to discuss both Simon Barrow's Solid Mental Grace and Stephen Lamb's Yes, Every Album, Every Song, which I'm currently enjoying as our book of the month. Incidentally, Simon, and presumably Stephen as well, would love you to leave some reviews on Amazon if you've read the aforementioned books. It really helps other people to find these great Yes companions. If you'd like to be in with the chance of winning various Yes goodies and also supporting the podcast financially, then head over to Patreon, patreon.com/yesmusicpodcast for all the details. Actually, I should mention that next month's giveaway will be one of the marvellous brand new YMP t-shirts, which you can see and buy in the YMP Emporium on yesmusicpodcast.com. The shirt has been tweaked to make the colours work better, and the design up there at the moment is a limited edition celebrating the 50 years of Yes and 7 years of the podcast. So if you'd like that design, it won't be there for long. It will be replaced with a different design in due course. This week on the YMP Facebook page, it was 25 years since Talk was released, and Preston Frazier shared his Something Else review of the Raven Fest, as well as an interview with Dave Kirzner collaborator Fernando Perdomo, and a shot of his 5% for Something YMP Book Club bookmarks. You can also have some of those if you sign up. The Deborah Anderson video for her dad's song Ramalama appeared, and I rather like it. And I also shared the Rolling Stone interview with Anderson, in which he mentions the final Yes Project idea. There are many other new Anderson interviews as well, around the interwebs. Mark and his dog Jackie enjoyed listening to topographic drama, and Daniel Crone shifted his attention to The Ladder, which he thinks is great, and so do I. Preston was back with his copy of the album by White, and Mark A. Jacobson posted a photo of his copy, which has an interesting story. He says, "Here is the original first press that Alan had done privately before they signed with Renaissance, so they could sell them at their shows. I got one because I was good friends with lead singer Kevin Curry at the time. I believe there were 1,000 of these made, but Alan was super expletive that they had the white border at the top and bottom, so they never sold them. Not sure what happened to the lot." Interesting stuff. Go and have a look at that alternative cover in Facebook. Mark posted his latest video about his new album, and Robert Mitchell pointed us towards the inspiration for Yours Is No Disgrace, apparently, which is the theme tune of the TV show Gideon's Way. And it is similar. In the visitor posts, Bill Hayes tells us he's been listening to Relayer a lot recently, which is certainly a good idea, and Doug Curran shared his rather fabulous copy of the first Yes album signed by all the original members of the band. Wow. Over on Twitter, Bill Govier and Mike O'Connor showed off their new Patreon bookmarks, and Mike has also been listening to Yes being played on Zenith Classic Rock. It's Arriving UFO from, altogether now, Tomato. Rob Early sent through several wonderful photographs he took of Yes concerts almost 40 years ago and his copy of the first Yes album signed by Peter Banks. I've put them in the show notes for this episode, so do go and take a look. Nick Moyart sent some John Anderson information, which was helpful, and there was a brilliant conversation on the show notes for last week's episode involving Peter Saint-André, John Thompson, Ian MB, Jeremy North, Tim Stannard and Tony Handley. So many thanks indeed to everyone who's been in contact in any way this week. So as I said earlier, Mark and I have been privileged to have access to a pre-release download of John Anderson's new album, 1000 Hands, Chapter 1. I'd like to thank Henry Potts, who has as usual pulled together as many details as possible about 1000 Hands in his amazing Yes, Where Are They Now website, as well as Jeff Bailey for his help, and Billy from Glass Onion PR. Here are a few pieces of important information from Henry's website and other sources about this project. Anderson has recorded a solo album entitled 1000 Hands Chapter 1 with producer Michael Franklin, a development of his 1990s Uzlot sessions with Brian Chatton, who he worked with when he was in The Warriors. The album is due on the 31st of March 2019. Late in November 2018, Franklin said in a Facebook group, "The mystery will be revealed soon. A lot of bits need to be in order before a release. Pat Travers tracks are new, as are most of the artists, 90% recorded in the last 2 years. Much of the recording process was subject to the touring artist schedules. Despite removing the samples from the website for a time in order to add more songs, according to Anderson, when the track listing reappeared, there were no new titles, although one song mentioned elsewhere, Love Is Everything, might turn up as an additional digital download on release. Some names we know were originally listed as taking part have been removed from the updated list, including Trevor Rabin, Jane Anderson, although she is on there, and Rick Wakeman. Anderson told the story in an interview released March 2018, but seemingly recorded October 2017. Franklin got in touch with me about a year ago, so 2016. He asked me about this project I started 28 years ago. The tapes got put in my garage and I forgot about them, because I was on tour with Yes and recording other albums and things like that. So Michael, we got together in California, where I live, and he said, why don't you come over to Orlando and do some work on the tapes and make the music happen? 27 years later, we are finishing it. The modern recordings were done at Solar Studios, Orlando, Florida. The early 90s sessions are the Uzlot sessions. At least Firstborn Leaders, Twice in a Lifetime and Come Up are associated with Uzlot, whereas Anderson describes Ramalama as being of recent invention. In May 2018, Anderson said, some of the recordings go back years, but we have upgraded them and improved them over the years, but the songs still sounded great. I've written 3 or 4 new songs to go with it. The first of the recent sessions was with Cobham on Come Up, while Korea also recorded parts for that song a year later. Ponty's contributions are also recent. In March 2019, Anderson confirmed that Steve Howe's contribution was recent, but recorded remotely. So you can read a lot more detail on Henry's page, which I've linked to in the show notes for this episode. As I said, the versions we have access to are digital downloads, but not full quality, perhaps. But they give a decent view of what's to come. I've decided to splice Mark's reactions in between mine, so you get a good overview. First song now is a short introductory song, which begins by reminding us of the opening of Close to the Edge. A building texture ends with Anderson's trademark finger bell, and then we hear his first vocals of the album. His voice sounds good, and the credits tell us that it's vocals John Anderson and Tommy Colton on guitar, rather than Steve Howe at this point. Anderson said he asked Howe to play on the last song of the album called Now and Again, which I think is an extended version of this opening number. There's also a song called Now Variations, so I think there is a bit of the classical technique of theme and variations going on here. Now appears to be the initial statement of this material, which is then returned to, but we shall see. It's a very pleasant tune, if tending perhaps a little too close to Anderson's naive side, if you don't like that aspect of his work. It ends with a few sounds in the distance on I'm not sure what kind of instrument. It's an interesting beginning.
Greetings, everyone. So here are my thoughts on the songs from John Anderson's 1000 Hands. So let's start with song number one, Now. So Now starts off with a very nice synth intro. I really like the tone of the keyboard. It's very nice. I also like the sound of the guitar. It's very nicely done. Tommy Colton, I believe, is the one who plays the guitar on this. John's vocals are fantastic. The song sort of reminds me of a mix of Holy Lamb meets Pigs on a Wing Part 1 from Pink Floyd. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with that song, but it definitely reminds me of a mix of those songs. It's very nice. The song has a very quiet, sort of intimate sort of feel to it. A very interesting way to start a record. And for me, it's a pretty promising way. I'm very happy with the start of this. It's only a minute and 15 seconds or so. So a great start to the album.
Next comes Ramalama, one of those songs already played on John's solo tour and released with a very effective video by John's daughter, Deborah, quite reminiscent of the one created for the John Anderson and Michael Burns song Dancing and Jumping, which I think was a collaboration between Anderson and Burns' Irish band Papercut. There's a bewildering array of different dancers from around the world incorporated into the Ramalama video via what I think is stock footage, but that doesn't make it any less effective. These clips are overlaid with multicoloured effects which could be described as psychedelic, but have been updated very much into the 21st century by digital artistry of a high order. If you haven't seen these two videos yet, I've embedded them into the show notes for this episode. So the cast of characters this time is vocals John Anderson, keyboards Michael Franklin, drums Matt Brown and Carmine Apis, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, bass Tim Franklin, violin Jason Thomas, banjo Mitch Corbin. Ramalama opens with the classic Anderson We Have Heaven style layered vocals, which he then sings over in an attractive manner, if you don't mind the somewhat banal lyrics. They aren't too off-putting for me. Banjo joins in as Anderson sings the first iteration of the Holy Ramalama. Perhaps somewhat due to the electronic percussion, this is reminiscent of some of Anderson's 1980s output, blended with earlier songs. And that's not a criticism. It's an enjoyable soundscape and full of pure Anderson positivity. Certainly isn't Yes, though. Violins and bass are added, and it all sounds like it's been developed from small fragments into a whole piece, which it may have been. The layered vocals continue throughout as an ostinato and all sorts of other instruments are thrown in, including some non-Western sounding ones. Sitar, Indian violin, Indian tabla drums, I think. Suddenly the music becomes a lot more frenetic, with everyone playing fast and furious lines. I think there are also some throat singers in there, which I don't know enough about to avoid being disrespectful if I try to explain what I mean, but it's an interesting effect. There's a huge amount thrown into this comparatively short song. It's only 3 minutes 52 seconds long, and maybe it could have been extended with some of the ideas given more space and time to develop. It's certainly a fascinating mix, though, and an enjoyable listen. And in fact, I've listened to it several times now and watched the video, and the song is really growing on me rapidly.
Song number 2 is Ramalama. Now, this song is fantastic. I have to admit that I fell in love with this song the very first time that I heard it. I love the way that John uses his voice as an instrument in this. In the intro especially, he could have replaced that whole melody, that did it with a keyboard or anything else that could have replicated that melody, but instead he used his vocals for it, and it sounds fantastic. It's very John Anderson. It reminds me very much of a mix of My Eyes from Footprints and a combination of We Have Heaven. Both are very, very vocally driven, and this song is no different. It has very optimistic lyrics, you know, the giving it love every day and those kinds of lyrics that he would throw in. The chorus is really brilliant, I think, the way they constructed it with the banjo and the electronic drums. I think it's makes it sound more current, but I think the banjo gives it a little bit of a twist to it that maybe one isn't expecting. For me, I have to say that this is the standout track from this album, for sure. Hats off to Mitch Corbin, who played the banjo, and to Matt Brown and Carmine Apis, who did the drums on this. I'm not sure who is credited for what. I'm guessing more the electronical end of the drums is Matt Brown, and Carmine probably played the acoustic end of it. But really, the star of the song is John Anderson. His vocals are absolutely amazing in this song, and easily this is the best song on the record.
Firstborn Leaders is next, which is the song with Chris Squire and Alan White, plus Larry Coyle on guitar, so I can't wait to hear what it's like. The full list of musicians is given as lead vocals John Anderson, guitar Larry Coyle and Tommy Colton, keyboards Michael Franklin, bass Chris Squire, fretless electric bass Tim Franklin, drums Alan White, percussion Steady Joseph, steel drums Pat Frost, ukulele Russell Chalk, Don Oriolo, Michael Franklin, saxophone Brian Snapp, Charlie DeChant, trombones Pat Galotta, Pat Frost, trumpets Steve Walters, Billy Boyd, Brian Scanlon, backing vocals Zap Mama, solo choir and the voices of Lindar. Crikey. I think it's meant to segue in from the end of Ramalama on the real album, and it begins with a sound not unlike the opening moments of Roundabout. This ground low note is the only accompaniment for Anderson's first vocals, which he declaims a little like the beginning of an impassioned oration. The traditional Anderson reverb is present, and it's a tantalising and teasing introduction, while we await the song really getting started. He's joined by a gospel choir and a church organ, which instantly evokes echoes of Parallels. It's quite a similar pattern, but much quieter here. The music builds very effectively, but if you were imagining this might turn into an interesting progressive rock number, you'll be disappointed indeed. In fact, it's a reggae-infused Caribbean carnival complete with steel pans. White's drums are great, as you'd expect, and Squire's bass is in the right style for this kind of music. It's a lot more like Anderson's 1988 album, In the City of Angels, than anything you've ever heard from Anderson, Squire and White before, but if you like that style, then you'll love this. There's whistling and an irrepressibly cheerful feel. The middle eight is stripped down, and then we return to the main feel. I think there's a bit of an abrupt key change, and there's a lot going on in the mix, horns and all kinds of percussion. Rather unexpectedly, there's a brief brass solo and some dramatic choir interjections in a section backed by that church organ again, as the voice is almost a chant, "We are the firstborn leaders." There's plenty of White fill action to enjoy, and it all ends suddenly with that trademark finger bell again. It's not really clear to me what is Chris Squire's bass here and what is Tim Franklin, but as the style of this song's unlike anything I've ever heard Squire playing on, perhaps his contributions are embedded deeply.
The next song is Firstborn Leaders. I was especially interested in this song, as we have both Chris Squire and Alan White playing on it. Again, it starts off with some very strong vocals by John, and then it kicks into a sort of reggae feel, which I wasn't really expecting, to be quite honest. It has some really nice bass playing. Of course, we know that Chris can tackle this type of stuff as far as the reggae end of it goes, because he did something similar on the song The Messenger from The Ladder. But with that told, the rest of the song is pretty plain, I think. Don't get me wrong, it's well done. There's nice vocals, both the lead and the harmony vocals in the choir, and the brass was a nice touch as well. And also the sort of foreign language singing was nice as well. I think it kind of added to the feel of the song. But I think that I was kind of expecting a bit more, especially since Chris and Alan were on it. I was expecting maybe a little bit more, you know, Yes-like playing in it. And I guess we didn't get it in this song. But again, there was some great playing on this, and a special mention to Michael Franklin for some fantastic organ playing.
Activate is next, and as I listen to these songs, I can see their waveforms in the software I'm using. Each of the songs so far appears to grow from a quiet beginning to a larger ending, interestingly. Activate is not only an archetypal Anderson title, it's also the longest song so far at 9 minutes and 24 seconds. Are you keeping up with counting towards our expected total of 1,000 hands? Here's this song's contribution. Vocals John Anderson, guitar Larry Coyle, Steve Morse, Tommy Colton and Pat Travers, bass Chris Squire, string bass and electric bass Tim Franklin, drums Alan White, keyboards Michael Franklin, Brian Chatton, flute Ian Anderson, violin Robbie Steinhardt, Olga Kopakova, cello Paul Fleury, percussion Steady Joseph, trombones Pat Galotta, Pat Frost, trumpets Steve Walters, Billy Boyd, Brian Scanlon, solo choir, voices of Lindau, Superstars Choir, and SFX by Michael Winslow. So Squire and White and Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull, but more bass as well from Franklin. Acoustic guitar patterns and various natural signs combined with touches of Glockenspiel start us off, and the acoustic guitar soloing over the top is lovely. Flute enters and the overall effect is gorgeous. Flute and solo guitar flit around each other in a pastoral delight, and are then joined by acoustic bass and keyboards before Anderson brings in one of his trademark vocal lines with lots and lots of words. The lyrics are interesting, though, and it's a highly effective opening with Ian Anderson's contributions really well integrated. A solo violin adds to the mix and shifts of tonality take us onwards. This is a little more like what prog fans may be looking for. The gradual growth is compelling and the opening vocal material is repeated. There's a hint of classical minimalism in the accompaniment, which recalls Anderson's Change We Must album. But then, oh, the chorus hits us. Perhaps I'll get used to this sudden change on subsequent listening, but I almost had to lie down to recover from the musical whiplash on this first time through. The bass and general tone have suddenly catapulted us back to the 80s, complete with backing singers and presumably lots of fluorescent coloured leg warmers. It only lasts a few seconds, though, and we are thrown back into the original feel, which I have to say I prefer. I think I can hear some Squire bass now, and of course that's a treat. The song moves rapidly through a lot of different sections, so it'll probably take a while to get used to it all. The Ian Anderson flute is great, and it's a fascinating journey. I wonder if that chorus will reappear. Anderson keeps mentioning propositions, some kind of legal thing, I think. I'm sure we'll find out. what that's all about. The chorus does return, but the treatment seems better this time, and it almost immediately disappears into a more climactic, Yes-like section, even incorporating solo electric guitar for a moment. There are clear echoes of Keys to Ascension-era Yes between White and Squire in the mix, and the piece ends with a bit of a string-infused epilogue. This is by far the most interesting song so far, so if I can get over that first chorus, it may become a favourite.
Next up, song 4 is Activate. So this is one of two epics on the album. I'm already hoping that this will be more like Yes. It has Chris and Alan on it, and I also see that it has one of my bigger guitar influences on here as well in Steve Morris from Deep Purple and Flying Colors. There's some nice classical guitar playing at the beginning, which could very well be Steve Morris. Also, we get some fantastic flute playing by the one and only Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull. So the prog elements are here. So how does it turn out? Well, the verse is a little wordy, I think. It could have been made a little less packed with words. He sort of had this problem as well with Anderson Stolt, the invention of knowledge. He did something similar, which I didn't like as well. As far as John's voice goes, it sounds fantastic. The song does start to pick up the pace a bit near the end, but overall I find the song a bit disappointing. Alan is really not even in this song very much. I'm starting to see a little bit of a pattern here as far as arrangement goes in the songs. The last minute of the song, though, I think is probably the best part of the song, and probably the part of the song that has Chris and Alan most audible in it.
So, from the sublime to, well, another song played live at Disney, Makes Me Happy. Here's this one's lineup. Vocals, John Anderson, keyboards, Michael Franklin, bass, Tim Franklin, guitar, Rick Derringer and Tony Colton, drums, Matt Brown, horn section, Tower of Power, ukulele, Tim Franklin, backing vocals, Frederick Caballaro, Ivan Guy Zerner, Spark Florin, Lynette Garino, Coco DeClaro, and beatbox, Michael Winslow. Beatbox and ukulele begin. Unfortunately, ukulele has been used in countless corporate videos and TV commercials recently, and this song does sound like one of those happy-go-lucky stock music loops. I'd really like to say it doesn't, but it does at the beginning. Anderson's lyrics and approach are also, again, irrepressibly cheerful. You may find it catchy and fun, or you may find it banal and annoying. Certainly the horn section, the reggae guitar, drums and the mobile bass are all really well done, and it's memorable. At the moment, I can't decide which way I'm going to go on this one. It suddenly leaps up in tempo for a horns and drums workout and then returns to the jaunty feel, then the stripped-down ukulele basis, and then a comical ending. I'd better leave this one for you to make your own decision on.
Okay, song 5 is Makes Me Happy. Oh boy. So we get a hip-hop intro for this song. I can understand that you want to be current, but come on, you're John Anderson. The beatboxing part of the song is provided by Michael Winslow, the man of 10,000 sounds, and is best known as the actor for Police Academy, known as Officer Jones. This is another reggae-influenced song, very upbeat, very happy-sounding, but very predictable too. Once I got into this whole reggae section, I kind of knew what to expect for the whole rest of the song. But it does have the Tower of Power horn section, which is nice. But there's not really much else to talk about. I mean, I think the drumming is done nicely on here. Matt Brown did a nice job with that. And the bass is really well done too by Tim Franklin. But it's a real shame though that they had somebody like Rick Derringer, who is a fantastic guitar player and a legend in the studio guitar playing world. And really, he's very underused in this song. So one of these songs where I expected a lot more than what I got.
So in the middle of the album, we have the Now Variations featuring lead vocals John Anderson, violin Olga Kapakova, and cello Paul Fleury. It's just 1 minute, 10 seconds of music and opens with Birdsong and some beautiful string arrangement of that theme we heard on the first track. Anderson's voice is strong and clear. It's a great palate cleanser, and in a collection which doesn't have a lot of commonality so far, it reminds us where we are.
Okay, song 6 is Now Variations. Now this is beautiful. I love this. Obviously this is part 2 of Now, the opening track. The sad thing is that I actually enjoyed this 1 minute and 10 second piece far better than the last two songs. So it seems that sometimes less is more. It's just John on vocals, Olga Kopakova on violin, and Paul Fleury on cello. It's fantastic. It's just basically a reworking of Now, but with just some violin sections added in replacement of the guitar. Brilliant. I love it, and it's a great track.
I Found Myself, another perfect Anderson title, is next up, with vocals John Anderson and Jane Anderson, keyboards Michael Franklin, bass Tim Franklin, drums Matt Brown, guitar Christy Linney and Tommy Colton, violin Jerry Goodman. Another song which creeps in with birdsong in the background and acoustic guitar, which is joined by impressive violin soloing. The mood then makes a quick change to a rather more vamping accompaniment on strummed acoustic guitar and a floating vocal melody. It goes with a pleasant swing, and if you don't mind Anderson's naive style, you'll probably like this. Jane Anderson then begins a duet, which is highly effective. In the middle, bass takes the centre stage along with violin, and the instrumental parts are very strong indeed. This is another one which will probably grow on me. Once again, there are a lot of different ideas thrown in, but if you do like the basic tune, then it's all put together pretty seamlessly and features some great instrumental moments alongside the Jane and John duetting. I could have perhaps done with more of the vocal duo, but an effective and enjoyable song.
Track 7 is I Found Myself. Now, this is very nicely played. It's got some great fretless bass playing by Tim Franklin. The vocals are nicely done by John and Jane Anderson. This is the ballad of the album, as you can tell, and you can feel that love between them in the words and the way that they sing this song to each other. Probably one of the strongest songs on the record, actually, to be honest. There's some great violin work on this by Jerry Goodman, and he's best known for being with the band Mahavishnu Orchestra. So again, a great example of not needing to do too much as far as overproduction to get a really fantastic song out of it. And I never would have thought that the ballad of this record would be a song that I thought would be one of the more stronger ones.
Twice in a Lifetime returns us to the cast of thousands. Vocals John Anderson, guitar Tommy Colton, string bass Tim Franklin, drums Matt Brown, keyboards Michael Franklin, Brian Chatton from the Warriors, flute Brian Snap, violin Charlie Bisharat, cello Paul Fleury, percussion Steady Joseph, trombones Pat Galotta, Pat Frost, trumpets Steve Walters, Billy Boyd, Brian Scanlon, woodwinds and flutes Brian Snap, Charlie DeChant, and accordion Darius Grabowski. There's been a lot of violin so far, but no sign yet of Jean-Luc Ponty. He'll be along soon. So what about the music? Well, there's another quiet start, with solo violin, this time in glorious isolation. The theme sounds a little bit Jewish-inspired, but then in another musical jolt, we are thrown as far as Paris, with accordion and acoustic guitar. Violin joins in again before Anderson enters with a strong vocal melody. Harpsichord appears, with some bass. All is fair in love and dream of mystery, sings Anderson, and it's an enjoyable mix. Magnification springs to mind because of some of the shapes of the vocal line, and I suppose the use of non-rock instruments. The theme is melancholic with regret, which is then blown away gently by the chorus passages. Some military snare drumming is in the background to emphasise some of the lyrics, and there are lovely solo violin interludes against some effective string bass. Brass and woodwind sounds are added towards the end with a bit of George Martin's Beatle effect, before a final iteration of the initial material. It's an unusual and rewarding song, with once again some great arrangements.
Next, we have song 8, which is Twice in a Lifetime. Nice violin intro by Charlie Bishkart, who is a person that I'm very familiar with, as I'm a huge fan of the new age band Shadowfax. He has a fantastic feel for the instrument, and right away the song is off to a great start. Then we're off to sort of an Italian restaurant sort of music thing going on with the accordion and the violin. But there's some nice guitar and keyboard work going on. The lyrics are good. Obviously, it's sort of written from a storytelling approach. And it reminds me very much of Stephen Wilson. He has songs that are very much of this sort of feel with this sort of approach to lyrics as well. They suit each other very much, the music and the lyrics. There's also a nice violin solo in the middle of the song. Overall, this song is very strong, I think. It's probably, in fact, the second best song on this record. With that said, I think that they should have put this song higher up on the track listing. What it's doing in position number 8, I don't know. But it's a very dynamic song, and it's one of those ones that the mood of the song, it instantly grabbed me, and I really, really enjoyed the song. So hats off to Mr. Anderson for writing a very interesting sort of lyric.
Next, we have the enigmatically titled WDMCF. It stands for Where Does Music Come From? It's just vocals, John Anderson, and keyboards, Michael Franklin. and it's 3 minutes and 42 seconds long. It creeps in, like most of these songs. A bed of quiet synth heralds a panpipe sound with an attractive melody. Anderson adds more of his wordless layered vocals, and I can't imagine he's really singing banana in the accompaniment, but with him, you never know. It's effective and well put together. Electronic drums are added as well as a bit of semi-tuned percussion before Anderson asks the question, where does music come from? Inside, outside. Then we're into a sort of techno beat. And I'm betraying my ignorance of more modern musical parlance, but as is often the case with this album, other aspects are woven in with solo violin, or at least violin sound on a keyboard maybe. It's maybe what you could describe as danceable, and perhaps has hints of Downs Braid Association material. It's soon over and not a song which will stay with me very long. It's interesting in its own way.
Then we have track 9, which is WDMCF, which actually means Where Does Music Come From? It's very interesting. Only 2 people are credited for this song, John Anderson on vocals and Michael Franklin on keyboards. So this is another keyboard synth pad fade-in, and it's interesting, the vocalization at the beginning revolves around the word banana, which is a word that I don't think you hear very much in songs, especially not repeated over and over again. But the vocals are nicely done, though. It has an interesting harmony choice in the song, like how he's harmonizing those words. It reminds me very much of Imogen Heap, who is a UK female electronic musician who is known very much for her sort of fantastic vocalizations that she does. So we get some programmed drums here as well with this. And this is John's attempt at the electronic music scene, I would guess. Overall, it's not too bad. I'm very curious, though, to when he wrote this song, because it's well known that a lot of this music was written over a 30-year time period, so this must have been during his electronic music phase. I don't really have much negative to say, but I think it is catchy. The only thing that just kind of bothers me a bit is constantly hearing that word banana repeated all the time in there. If you would have just thought of a different word to harmonize, I think I would have liked it even more.
Come Up is the penultimate song, and this is another which includes a stellar cast. Vocals John Anderson, piano Chick Corea, keyboards Michael Franklin, Jonathan Kane, guitar Larry Coyle and Tommy Colton, bass Chris Squire, string bass Tim Franklin, slap bass Stuart Hamm, drums Billy Cobham, violin Jean-Luc Ponty, cello Paul Fleury, percussion Steady Joseph, backing vocals Zap Mama, solo choir, voices of Lindar, and the Superstars Choir. So there's a list which whets the appetite. This is over 9 minutes of music, and guess what? It opens quietly, with piano, presumably Chick Corea in a dancing jazzy fashion with some added keyboard string sounds. You won't be surprised to hear that the piano work is fantastic, and soon the Franklin string bass and Billy Cobham join in to create a wonderful late-night jazz club feel. Welcome to the Moonlight Lounge, everyone. Anderson's vocals appear in a much lower register than we're used to. His voice sounds appropriately smoky, as if he is also in that jazz club, and it's an immersive and intriguing mixture. This song has a proper verse and chorus structure with backing singers in the chorus, and I'm very pleased to say that Chick Corea re-enters the fray. He has to contend with steel drums and assorted other instruments, but it all works well and has by now morphed into more of a pop fusion feel. A sudden shift reveals Chris Squire's bass, as the mood is notched up for a short time until Jean-Luc Ponty gets a turn to solo in his masterful way. It's a very well-constructed song with once again a huge amount going on. Slap bass makes an appearance and then Ponty is back in a fast and furious passage. There certainly are dozens of hands at work here, if not a thousand, and it'll take many repeated listens to get a proper sense of form and effectiveness. It's certainly a fascinating mix once again with plenty of Anderson vocal input. 3/4 of the way through, it's turned into a bit of a stadium pop rock number, but then it transforms once again via undulating piano, meditative violin, snare drum rolling and assorted shifting effects through various changes in tonality to ebb away. It's a remarkable musical journey, and if you're looking for some creative and, dare I say it, progressive music, then this is a great candidate. It's not possible to slot it into a neat category, and maybe there's too much change in its scope, but I'll let you decide. It's certainly an unusual and fascinating piece.
Now we're at song 10, Come Up. Now, I had really high hopes for this song. Why? It's another epic, 9 minutes and 24 seconds, and you got the following people playing on this. John Anderson on vocals, Chick Corea on piano, Jonathan Kane, who's the keyboard player for Pink Floyd during the Momentary Lapse of Reason and Division Bell albums, Chris Squire on bass, Billy Cobham, the legendary drummer with the Mahavishnu Orchestra, Miles Davis, and many others on drums, Jean-Luc Ponty on electric violin, and on the slap bass you have MIT, which is Music Institute Technology legend, Stu Hamm. Now, Music Institute Technology is a school, a legendary school in California that teaches young musicians how to play very technical in the style of like Dream Theater and so on and so forth. And Stu Hamm was very well known for his sort of bass playing with Joe Satriani. So, of course, I thought to myself, this should be absolutely incredible. So is it? Well, yes, it is. There's some nice piano right off the top done by Chick Corea. Nice bass and drum work, which is expected. But the interesting part is that the bass at the very top is sort of a stand-up bass playing done by Tim Franklin. Billy Cobham has an amazing feel on drums. This is the sort of song that I've been waiting for from this album. It's just great technical playing with fantastic feel. This is something that only musicians with years and years of experience can give to a song. It also gives John a great platform to layer his fantastic vocal melodies over. So when you have something this strong musically, it just makes John's vocals that much stronger. It is interesting, though, how easily you can pick out when Chris Squire is playing the bass. His tone just really jumps out at those sections. And then you get a great violin solo by Jean-Luc Ponty, the electric violin solo. And then the slap bass, which is around the 5-minute mark, is Stu Hamm at his very best. There is so much going on in this song, but in a good way. This must have been both a thrill and a nightmare for Matt Brown to mix this song in particular. Oh, and I must also mention the man who mastered this album, Bernie Grundman, who is a legend in the studio world, and anything that he masters is gold, and this is really no exception. Now, I may not like some of the songs on this album, but everything sounds brilliant and is very well produced and mastered. A really great audio treat. So if somebody out there has a fantastic sound system, then at the very least, you will have a record that will just sound brilliant on your system.
So finally, we reach the last song, Now and Again, which should give us another iteration of the main theme of the album. This is the one which includes Steve Howe, and the full list is vocals John Anderson, classical guitar solo Steve Howe, guitar Tommy Colton, Bobby Coable, I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce that, string bass and fretless electric bass Tim Franklin, keyboards Michael Franklin, violin Olga Kopakova, cello Paul Fleury, percussion Sally Joseph, trombones Pat Galotta, Pat Frost, trumpets Steve Walters, Billy Boyd, Brian Scanlon, woodwinds and flutes Brian Snapp, Charlie DeChant. That's a lot of people for a song which lasts just over 3.5 minutes. Or maybe it's not. We shall see. I have to say I've grown to like this theme, and I find myself humming it as I go about my daily tasks. This time we have acoustic guitar and Anderson at the start, and a bit of keyboard and soft percussion backing. This is meant to finish off the album, and it appears to have finished very soon, but in fact it's a false ending, and Anderson continues the similar accompaniment in a slightly different mood. And here we find Steve Howe's solo. It's an intertwining of vocal line and picked classical solo, and it works very well. Of course, it's a treat to hear the two of them together, even for a very brief time. The choir and orchestral type backing is highly effective, and we have a reversal of the opening moments of the album to complete it. So, on first listen, I like a lot of the music, and it's produced and arranged very well indeed. I'm not sure at this stage whether it holds together as a complete album listening experience, despite the linking material. It's maybe too disparate in style and approach, but I'll have to listen again several times to make a proper judgment on that. There's certainly plenty to appeal to all kinds of Anderson fans, and it's great fun to try and spot the contributions of the various artists. Overall, I would recommend that you do get yourself a copy, as long as you have liked some of Anderson's output over the years, and you can play some amusing games of linking this music back to its origins and trying to imagine what it would be like in a Yes context. Apparently, Thousand Hands Part 2 will be worked on this year to be released next year.
Now we end this album with Now and Again. Now, this is the moment that I've been waiting for. Steve Howe's appearance on classical solo guitar is on this song. Now, this is the third variation of the song Now. It's another great version. This time we have percussion added to the fold, as well as woodwinds and brass. There's also some additional lyrics, and Steve's classical playing is fantastic. It reminds me of bits of Turn of the Century and a little bit of his playing from Innuendo from the Queen album that he did, titled Innuendo. So this is a really good version of the song Now. And really, it's a nice way to end the album. It's basically just taking Now, which started out as a very basic song with guitar and vocal, and then just sort of adding on things as the album went on to this point, which is a very grandiose version of it. And a very interesting thing to make note of is the first song, which is Now, started with John Anderson's signature finger cymbals, and the very last thing that we hear on the end of this song is John Anderson's finger cymbals. So what would I give this record out of a 10? I haven't done this in a long time. Well, if it wasn't for songs like Come Up and Ram-a-Lama, it probably wouldn't get that high a score, but the production is well done, the mastering sounds really good, and those songs really stand out, and even the Now variations, the three different versions of it, really help. So I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10.
So the long-awaited new album from John Anderson. And those are our feelings about it. You may have completely different ones, of course, when you get to hear it on the 31st of this month. And Mark is with me here now. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. So what did you think overall then? We know you gave it a sort of a 7 out of 10, this album. Is it too fragmented? Is it too varied? For, you know, there are lots of different styles of music going on in there. So does it hold together as a whole album, as a work, and does it need to?
I think it holds together pretty good. What I was afraid of when I first heard some of the backstory of this record, with it being worked on over the last 30 years and at different time periods, One of the things that could hurt a record is that, you know, your recording techniques and stuff like that change from time to time, and it doesn't always sound the same, right? Yeah. But they did a fantastic job of making it sound very much like a cohesive record. And I think Bernie Grundman, who mastered it, did an absolutely stellar job with making it sound like it was worked on all at one time, which it obviously wasn't. But I think that's one thing that's very well done, and needs to have their, you know, it needs for us to tip their hats to them for something like that happening.
Yeah, I think you're right, because, you know, you can hear Chris Squire in there, and both of us spotted Chris Squire. He's you know, unmistakable when he comes in, and Alan White's drums, and we know that was recorded quite some time ago, and Steve Howe's more recently, Chick Corea and Billy Cobham, etc., much more recently. And yes, they do seem to have fitted it all together really rather well. And if you compare it to something like, for example, the last Queen album, where they used archive material of Freddie Mercury's recordings and put the rest of the band around them, thinking of some of his solo numbers that they put into that. And you can very definitely hear the completely different, as you say, quality control of the different ways of recording, and analog to digital and so on. But this really does seem to have been done extremely well. So I can imagine your answer to this question, but you think it was worth revisiting this stuff and working it up into this new album of material?
Some of it more than others, obviously. Mm. Obviously, the song that I love the most is Ram-a-Lama. I think that's just a standout song, and I think that's a more newer one that they had worked on. But if I'm not mistaken, according to your notes, I think you said that, I believe, one of the last songs, which is called...
Come Up, or...
Yeah, Come Up was one of the ones that was written a while back that they had worked on. And I think that's a song that's like another standout song on it. I think certain songs were just better overall. I mean, a lot of the songs that had that more reggae feel to it and stuff like that, or songs that had some of the, you know, electronical feel or the beatboxing or, you know, hip hop elements or the stuff that I didn't really particularly like as much.
Yeah.
But I'll just say that overall, I don't think there's any real stinkers on this, but there are definitely weaker songs on here.
Yes, I think that's right. But I suppose in a way then, as I said in my piece, if you do like some of John Anderson's solo output, you're bound to enjoy a lot of this here. If you're more of a Yes fan, then there is still some stuff in there. The longer and more explorative type songs are very much up your street. The one which sticks out to me, I think, really is Makes Me Happy. Now, it just it just errs too much on the side of irrepressibly cheerful and it's funny that he started the warm up concerts at Disney, because that's what this song made me think of, was a bit of a Disney theme to one of its really rather more happy go lucky films, with perhaps, I don't know, a rabbit or something bouncing down the road. And I think you'll either love it or hate it, like some of the songs on Heaven and Earth as well. So I don't think that one did particularly well. But I think one of the weaknesses, now I do like Invention of Knowledge, but that's one of the most recent albums on which he appears extensively, Anderson. Now, one of its weaknesses, though, is I think it's been worked on too much. I think they've packed too much into it. But I think on this album, they've actually got the balance almost perfect on most of it, haven't they? Because there's an awful lot going on. There's an awful lot of people in there, and a lot of musicians and a lot of parts. But it doesn't seem to have gone too far towards being too cluttered.
I think I made a comment in maybe one song where I found that it might have been a little bit, you know, too congested with stuff.
Yeah.
But I think that was probably the only song. I'm thinking it might have been Activate or something like that.
Yeah.
I think overall it's a marketable improvement, I think, because one of the things I didn't like about the Anderson Stolt record was that there just seemed to be way too much lyrics going on and singing in there. There just didn't seem enough time for music to breathe in there. It was just constantly John singing, which, you know, some people might have enjoyed, but it's just something that I didn't particularly like. But I think that he kind of has a better vision, and maybe the guy that he worked with on this, I believe his name was Matt.
Yeah, Michael Franklin.
Yes, Michael Franklin.
So, yes, I think that's really important. What did you think about the contribution of the stars? Because at times where you've got perhaps three different bass players playing in the same song, you've got a slap bass or an acoustic bass or whatever, and Chris Squire, and you definitely can tell, obviously, when he comes in, because his tone is completely different. But does that muddy the waters too much? Can you have too many different bass sounds and effects in one short song?
You know what? The funny thing is, I had that initial thought that it might be that might actually happen. But I found, though, interestingly enough, that sometimes I found that these people weren't used enough, I thought. Like, for example, I remember when I was doing the reviews of this that I was listening to, and I think it was Makes Me Happy. Yeah. I have a note here saying that Rick Derringer was listed as playing guitar, and really, he's very hard to pick out in this at all. And I mean, he's one of the best studio session guitar players of all time, you know, and he's done some fantastic work, and where he is in that song is very hard for me to kind of pick out. I mean, I'm sure he's there, otherwise I wouldn't have listed him.
Yeah.
But some of these people I find are maybe even underused in some aspects. I mean, the great example, I think the best example of using them properly was, again, the closing song, Come Up, I believe it's called, right? Yeah, Come Up, I think, had the best example of it. I mean, you had, you know, Chick Corea's piano work is fantastic. Yeah. Billy Cobham's drum work is amazing. John Luke Ponte's violin playing is so obvious. I mean, that is a great example of it. But there are other examples of it where, you know, they list these people. Like, for example, Alan White is credited on Firstborn Leaders. And, you know, he's drumming on there, but that could have been any Joe Blow drumming that, you know. It just doesn't seem like there's something very Alan White-ish going on in there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas where you had Billy Cobham, and you know it's him.
Yes, absolutely. And I think Ian Anderson as well fulfills his role extremely, extremely well. You can definitely tell that he's in there. That's in Activate, one of the two epics.
Yes.
And the WDM MCF thing, which I just wanted to mention, the use of the word banana, which is quite funny once you notice it there. But the other thing that you mentioned was Imogen Heap. Now, that's fascinating, because I was just introduced to Imogen Heap by my 13-year-old daughter, Charlotte, this last week. And I'd never heard Imogen Heap's work before. And it's fascinating stuff, isn't it? The vocal things that she comes up with and the way that they're treated did remind me a little bit of John Anderson's treatment of some of the things, but it's perhaps even more out there, left field than Anderson does. But yeah, fantastic stuff. Do you know a lot about Imogen Heap? Going off tangent here, but
The funny thing is, few years back, there was a girl that I was seeing, and she was really big into Imogen Heap. And I was, you know, had it in the car all the time because she loved listening to it. And I kind of really grew to like the whole production end of it, and her work vocally is fantastic. Mm. And also, the funny thing was that I had a Jeff Beck live DVD that came out at a bar in London. That was going to bug me. It's a really popular bar.
Was it Ronnie Scott's?
That's it, Ronnie yes. Scott. Yeah. And yeah, it's Jeff Beck live at Ronnie Scott's, and Imogen Heap sings a couple of songs with him on there. And it just shows that she can do vastly more than just electronic music. She's a fantastic singer. And it's just, I guess, the electronic thing is her kind of niche, and maybe the kind of music that she enjoys doing the most.
Yeah.
And it just sounds great, her kind of approach to vocals.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, that was a great tangent. If you like Imogen Heap, let us know, and send me some examples, send me some recommendations in the show notes for this week's episodes. But yes, I was pleased with most of the way that the kind of stars were used. And in stark contrast to things like, I don't know if you came across the song by Gary Barlow, a little bit of ARW connection there, because Lee Pomeroy plays bass guitar for Take That, that Gary Barlow was in. So yeah, slightly tenuous, but there you go. So he produced a song, a charity song called Sing, which he composed with Andrew Lloyd Webber, the musical guy. And I watched the documentary of the making of that, and it's amazing. He goes around Africa and he records children singing, and he records musicians that he just finds on his travels around Africa. And it's wonderful, the things that he picks up. But when he then brings them back into this song called Sing, they get completely lost. They get so far down in the mix, or they're so treated electronically and so on, that you can't tell that they're there at all. So I find that really, really frustrating. But in this, I think that the majority of the time they do get that balance pretty much right. So let me ask you a couple of questions to finish off then. We'll leave everyone to get a copy of this and listen to it themselves and let us know what they think when they get it. Would you recommend it for Anderson fans, for Yes fans? Who's this for, do you think?
I definitely think it leans more towards John Anderson solo fan material. People who like his solo work, I think will appreciate it, because John Anderson's solo work, as we know, is so varied.
Yeah.
It's not just one thing. He does so many different things from record to record. It's not one fixed thing. Whereas Yes has more of a very focused thing that they like to do, and just they kind of expand on it in different ways, right? So I think that it's definitely more geared toward the solo listener.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, some of the epic stuff, some of the longer stuff, some of the more explorative stuff certainly will be of interest to Yes fans who like that angle of the outputs. But yes, I agree with you. This is very much a really good, I think, John Anderson solo record. And I'm very, very glad that we've had an early chance to have a listen to it. So for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're welcome, Kevin.
This is Two Pence with Mark Anthony Kay and Kevin Mulrine.
So here we are for Two Pence, and Mark is still with me. So what we're going to tussle with today, Mark, is these Yes reunion rumours that are spiralling out of control since Anderson has said a few things, and of course Steve Howe appears on the album in the last song, and it's a nice little cameo, really, from him in the album. So Anderson seems up for it. Steve Howe is clearly not that unhappy with Anderson now, because he quite recently recorded that for his new album. So what do you think? Is this going to happen?
Let me say this first. Please, God, no. Don't let this happen. I really don't want this to happen. And I know people are probably booing and hissing me who are listening to this, going, what are you talking about? But I'm going to take my position like this. It took this lineup of Yes a bit of time to get itself properly gelled. I mean, when they did Heaven and Earth, it was probably a bad time to have done the record, I think. For whatever reason they did it, and that's that. But I think now they're at a point where they know each other very well on stage, off stage. They have that kind of chemistry now. They play all the material fantastic. I think John Davison is an extremely strong voice now. I think now is the proper time for them to go back in, make a fantastic record. They got Billy Sherwood now permanently in the band, who can contribute a lot to the writing and to the production and everything else. I think now is the time to hit the iron while it's hot and to do this. And I think bringing John Anderson back now would completely deflate it like a balloon, like a pin to a balloon. It would just completely, and that would be the end of it. I think that, listen, I love John Anderson, but I think this is absolutely something very selfish on his part, because I think Yes Proper has been working so hard to get themselves to this position. And now, you know, ironically, ARW have gone the way of the dodo bird and are no longer happening, and if they even will continue. So isn't it ironic that now all of a sudden he sees that he'd be so open now to going back and doing the Yes reunion? Where was this talk earlier? You know, like, you know, obviously you're not going to probably say it, I know, when you're with a band and you want to show unity at that point.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, it just seems, the timing seems a little too suspicious to me that now all of a sudden now he wants back in, and, you know, and even mentions that it has to be a proper Yes big finale record that we have to do as well. It's like, you know what, it's, you're just saying that now because you couldn't get those guys to make the record that you wanted with you, so now you're going to try to pop in there, you know, push John Davison aside and come back in. And I think that honestly that would really, really anger me if that happened.
Okay, so certainly you don't want Anderson to rejoin, because, you know, with the best will in the world, you couldn't see him sharing that role with John Davison. That just wouldn't happen. And something else that I can't see happening at all is Rick Wakeman. I mean, from his point of view, you've got, really got to wonder what he would have, you know, what he could gain from rejoining or being involved with Yes again. Of course, we have said in the past that he's been happy to come in as a session musician, so I suppose you could have him coming into the studio to add a few parts here and there. But I think Rick Wakeman's got many, many other things that he's much more interested in doing. And certainly I don't think there's been any thawing of the relationship between Wakeman and Howe, that's for sure. So I can't see him being involved, and I can't see Anderson coming back to share that role. That's right. So when he says he's got 8 songs that he's already prepared for this supposed last roll of the dice for Yes, he comes back. So, yeah, I can't see it happening. I think the most that I could see happening would be some kind of event, which is an actual Yes event rather than a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame event and all the stuff that went around that. I suppose that might be possible, but I can't really see it happening at the moment. I don't think, certainly Jeff Downes, for example, was very unimpressed with the stuff that went on at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He made no secret of that on Twitter and so on. So I don't think he's a fan of AR&W. They've already got, of course, the big links, and they've had playing with them Mraz and Kay and Horn. So perhaps in a way, actually, Yes have already done what they want to do along this line.
Yeah, I think so. And like I said, I haven't said it, I'm going to say it now. The only thing I could see maybe happening, and I think this is an extremely long shot, and the only thing that I'd be probably okay with, is if they did a tour and they did something similar like what they did with, you know, Patrick Mraz or Tony Kay or something. Bring John in for the encore, maybe sing 3 songs at the end, and that's it. That I can be okay with. But there's no way he should be coming back in and taking John Davison's place. There's no way. He is now firmly, in my mind, etched in as the singer of that band. So,
Yeah. I think I agree. And to be absolutely honest, I just can't see Anderson agreeing to come in just to do a solo spot, as it were, take over the lead role in the same way as Patrick Mraz and Tony Kay have been happy to do. I just can't see it happening. However, don't take our word for it. As usual, please let us know in the show notes for this episode if you think that will happen, or would you like to see these 8 songs finished off by the rest of Yes and Anderson in to sing them? What's your opinion? Do you agree with us that it's never going to happen and it shouldn't happen? Or do you think quite the reverse? For the moment, Mark, thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome, Kevin. I've heard all Yes.
best music podcast every week. I love to hear what Kevin says. I've heard all Yes Music podcasts every week. I love to hear what Kevin says.
Just before we go, here's the patron update for this week. Yes Music podcast producers are Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, VR Hoisington, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. And Yes Music podcast patrons are Aaron Steelman, Mark James Lang, Joost Maglev, Brian Kelberg, Bob Martellotta, Michael O'Connor, Brian Sullivan, Miguel Falcao, Chris Bandini, Neil Caffrey, Craig Estenes, Paul Hales, Dave Owen, Paul Tomei, David Hayden, Paul Wilson, Lind, Peter Herndon, David Pannell, Lobate Scarp, David Watkinson, Rachel Hadaway, Dem, Mark Zarkol-Bags, Doug Curran, Robert Nasa, Fergus Cubbage, Scott Colombo, Fred Barringer, Scott Smith, Jeff Bailey, Simon Barrow, Jeffrey Mason, Stephen Lamb, Guy de Rome, Steve Dill, Henrik Antonsen, Steve Perry, H.B. Peterson, Steve Rode, Ian M.B., Steve Scott, Jamie McQuinn, Steve Raw, Ken Fuller, Terence Sadler, Jeremy North, Tim Stannard, Jim, Todd Dudley, John Cowan, Tony Handley, John Holden, Joseph Cottrell, John Parry, Keith Hoisington, John Thompson, and William Hayes. Also, continued thanks as always to Robert and David. So thank you very much indeed to those patrons. If you'd like a quick and easy way to join them, then just go to yesmusicpodcast.com and click on the Patreon button. So that's just about all the time we have this week. I do hope we'll be back again next week. In the meantime, do please contact the show via Twitter, via Facebook, via Instagram, or via show@yesmusicpodcast.com. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.